outside. I was walking along before I got here, and I saw this bus getting towed by a big tow truck.
Oh, cool. Wow.
And I thought, exactly. I thought, oh, cool. You don't see that too much. So I'm going to put it on my website. No real reason, because it's kind of cool. You don't see a bus getting towed everywhere. So I took this picture with my little digital camera here that I carry all the time, plugged it into my laptop, and there it is. And it's not an all-in focus, but it's kind of neat. You know, these big tow trucks, you see them drive by sometimes. How do they ever get these things on there? Well, there it is. So I'm going to put that on my website. And that's the way I like to approach websites, and we'll be talking about that. You can just put stuff up there if you find it interesting. And you'd be surprised how many other fun people find it interesting when they come to your website. It's weird. It happened to me. So anyway. Yeah.
But, you know, what would be neat is to have like a video of our monthly meeting. Put it on the website. You go and if you're living out in Fort Henry or wherever. Yeah. It's
unfortunately, videos are really big. So it would be cool. What you could probably do is have a video of one meeting and then have to get chucked. Unless somebody had a lot of money to spend on the server, you wouldn't be able to keep them. We're going to try and do the audio at some point, because these do get recorded. Okay, so we have a lot of good stuff over here in our website thing. A lot of these are very specific, other than information. That's fairly general. These are general. I want to get really general, and one of those is actually one of the general things I'm going to say. When you're looking at a website, when you're thinking about building a website, you're often thinking about, what am I going to do with this? What is this going to do for me? That's fine. The problem with that is that the people who are using your website get left out of it. And ultimately, it's about the people who are coming. There are two things a website's for. Okay, three things. The two things are, somebody's coming to a website, yours or something else, to get some information. Now, they could be getting information of all different sorts. They could be getting, what did I have on my list here? They could be trying to find an email address. They could be trying to learn about a product. They could be trying to get a definition, or read something educational or entertaining, or look at movies or pictures, or check snow conditions. That's from Cypress Bowl. That was live. I was going to do the live one, but I don't have an internet connection. So that's what it was like last night at 4 o'clock. So it looks pretty good. You can go skiing there today. It's a good piece of information to have. Better than if it was all rocks. Because if you look across the mountain right now, it's not too great. Okay, that's a good thing. Then you can get information. That's one big thing. The other thing is to do something useful. Now, usually that involves information, but you could be buying a book or getting a map to find your EAC meeting, or playing a game, or lodging a complaint about something, or downloading a program you need to run, or designing a business card, or you could buy a t-shirt. Okay, that was a cheap shot, but I'll those were up less than a day after that happened. But anyway, you could buy a t-shirt. Other things you could do, you could find an editor, and you could try and hire one. Those are information and things to do. Even the biggest sites, like Amazon.com, you know, there's always a good example. That's about as big as it gets. For the people who run Amazon, their job is to make money. That's what they want. But the only way they can do that is if there's a lot of good information and good things to do for people. People can find out about books and videos and movies and Segway scooters and scooters and clothes and whatever else, and they can buy them. And that's where the money goes in. But the only way Amazon makes money is if people find it useful and can do what they need to do on it. So all this stuff, you can bring in work, you can enhance your reputation, you can build your skills, you can have some geeky fun, which is why I do a lot of it. All these things we're talking about, there are a lot of them that are for you. They only come out when you've made your site useful for the people who are coming. That's what you have to think. And the way I look at that is pity the poor user. Pity the poor visitor to your site. Because they go to a lot of sites, and a lot of them really don't get what they want. They're trying to find something and they can't find. Or they're often frustrated by the experience, and I'm sure you are.
Yeah.
You're on websites, you're trying to find something, and you can't. You can't do what you want to do. You get three quarters of the way through the shopping cart, and it only lets you put in U.S. states and it won't accept your order.
Yeah.
Even though they say they ship to Canada, but they, for some reason, it's busted. Those sort of things happen all the time. So you need to think, when you're building a website, how am I going to make this as easy as possible for people who are coming to do things here? And we'll get to it. Want to see the t-shirt again?
Yeah.
I don't have a close-up, unfortunately. There was a close-up on the real website. The link is there when you go to my website. Okay. So what we're going to talk about is, is your website ready? You're gonna, you know, you hired somebody or you decided to learn how to do it yourself. When is it ready to put up? And my opinion is it's ready to put up any old time. And if all you do is take your business card as it currently exists, scan it into a scanner, make a picture of it, and slap it on your website and make it so that when you click on it, somebody sends you an email, that's great. Now you have a website. That's better than nothing, and you can always change it. That's the thing, you can always change it. You've got a website and something's not working or you don't like it or you want to improve it, you do that all the time. Sometimes I put a post on my website, I do a little entry, and something's wrong with it, so I go back and fix it. And then, there's this wrong mistake. Oh, there should be a comment. Oh, I've got some other things to say. And I go back and I, essentially the website gets changed 6 times in the course of 4 minutes. And that's okay. Because, you know, the first time it went up and there was something wrong, and who's ever going to see it? There's not that many people. But a website's never ready. And you used to see, you don't see as much anymore. You see those under construction signs. Ditch that. It's always under construction. Always. First moment you put it up, it's under construction. 4 years later, these ones. Amazon, Yahoo, CBC News. Are they the same as they were yesterday? Do they have the same stuff? Do they look the same? Do they have the same stuff? They're under construction all the time. And they change what they do all the time. You go back, they modify things, they tweak it a little. The ones who do it right, don't tweak it too much, because then you come back and you don't know where you are.
Yeah.
But, you know, Yahoo's looked pretty much the same. I wish I could show it to you. It looked fundamentally the same since it went up in 1994. That same logo and the same sort of stuff across the top, a whole bunch of other things we're used to, but still basically the same stuff. So that's nice. CBC News has, you know, new stuff every 10 minutes, whatever. Whenever they put something on the radio or on TV, it's on the web too. That's great. Change it as much as you want, as often as you want. The more the better, really. And it's surprising the people who don't take this advice. There's a good friend of mine. This is what his website looks like. It's looked like this for about 8 months. Then click at an email him, and it says his website, you know. I mean, I'm not really being fair, because he's actually set up 2 or 3 other websites for other things. This was his site, and it was a perfectly decent site. It was kind of funny, weird, he's had Flash stuff, whatever. But he decided, oh, I want to build a new one, so we took it down, and he started working, and he never got done. Why he didn't leave the old one up, I don't know. There's nothing wrong with it. If you want to do a whole big makeover of your site, just leave the old one there, and then put up the new one once you've got whatever you were doing. And if you never get around to it, the old one's still there. You can always fix it up. There's no point in doing this. unless there's some party reason. I don't know. And that's its own purpose. So, the other thing is that I'm going to be talking about is you should get your own domain. You can put your site up almost anywhere. Chances are, you're thinking, well, how do I get someone to build my site? I mean, what do I do? Chances are, if you've got somebody, if you've got internet access at home, and a computer, there's somebody you dial into or you connect through your cable or DSL or whatever. Chances are, almost every one of those internet providers has free web space for everybody who's on. It might not be a lot. Way more than it used to be. First site I built in 1997, the amount of space they let me use was 200K. So what is that equivalent to? Nothing. I mean, that's smaller than some of the pictures on my site by a big margin now. You could fit 7 of those sites on a floppy disk. 200K, that's all they let you have. This was a long time ago. But I got the whole site in there. In fact, I'm going to show it to you. Because 200K, when you're dealing with text, which is what most of these websites are, is a lot. You know, that's 200,000 letters. Or, you know, whatever that is. It's like a novella. It was just text, but a lot. So you could build a site in that tiny amount of space. And these days, most of the time, an internet provider would give you 5 megabytes of space. So a lot more than that. You can build a perfectly decent website in a very small chunk of that. So first of all, talk to your internet provider and find out how you, there's probably just space sitting there waiting for you. It's been there since you signed up. You can put your stuff there and get on the web. It just is. Technically, you can talk to me about it later if you want, or talk to them about how you do that. But it's not complicated. You make some text files and you transfer them to your internet provider, and then they're on the web. Just match it there.
The same as HTML?
Yeah. They're just text files with an ending HTML.
Great.
Anyway, so that's all that there really is. The difficulty with that is, you do that, and say in a year or 2 years, you get really tired of it. You're providing lousy service, the email's always down, or you move somewhere and they're not there. You know, you move to Saskatchewan and you can't get, or you move to New Brunswick and you can't get TELUS high-speed connection. Problem is, you lose your email, you lose your email address, and you lose your web address, and then those people who hired you 2 years ago can't find you. At least not with the info they have. They have to go to Google and try and find you. So my advice is to try and get an actual domain, like mypenmachine.com or whatever. It's not as hard as to come up with one as you might think. There was a time a couple of years ago when everybody thought, oh, you got to have a .com name. That's what everybody assumes. That's not true anymore because it ran out. People had every... for some reason, Pen Machine, I was trying to think of them, and I looked up ones that were available or not. Then one night, I was half asleep, and Pen Machine was taken. That's not a bad thing. I bet it's taken. And I checked, and it wasn't, so I took it. And that was a .com, but there's .ca, which is good. In fact, that may be better, because then people know you're in Canada. And if they're trying to hire a Canadian editor, that would be a good thing. And you can even have .bc.ca, it says you're in BC, so people can still hire you for more, but they know where you are. And there's all sorts of weird, obscure ones. So, you need to brainstorm, and there's all sorts of services online that will find them. And one I like, and I was going to point to it, but I can't. I'll put it on my site. It's called domaindirect.com. This is not a particular endorsement, although I have used them. They're based in Toronto, so they're Canadian. It's part of the house. Share website. But what they do is they'll let you register a domain and find one. But then they do a neat little trick where you can have your website anywhere. You can have it on your local ISP, you can have it theoretically on a computer in your room that's hooked up to the internet and setting up as a website. And all they do is they put, whatever, penmachine.com, and when people type that in, that actually goes to their computer in Toronto. And then they do a little sort of web code trick that leaves that up there, but then points the actual page to wherever you say, and you can change that any time. Again, you can change it 5 times in 6 minutes. That would be weird. So when people type in the name, they go to wherever you want. That's good because sometimes, people like TELUS or whoever, they'll do this, what they call domain resolution, where you have the name and points at site. They charge you an arm and a leg for it. Even though they've already given you a free site, they charge you some stupid amount, like $25 a month or something, for just pointing at it, which is ridiculous. So if they're going to do that to you, if they do it cheaply, great, then you can just point it there. If not, something like Domain Direct, which just does a little trick, has its downsides. Don't worry about that. Essentially, you can get a domain and you can get it pointed to wherever you want it, pretty cheap. You're looking in the tens of dollars a year. So pretty cheap in the grand scheme of things. And what you should do once you get a domain is put it on everything. It's more important than your phone number. It's more important than the name of your company. It's more important than your name in many respects. Because usually a domain is easier to remember. Sorry, go ahead.
I think maybe going
to
that, but I'm just wondering what sort of people in having a personal name
I couldn't get Derek Miller on it, I think, so I didn't take it. The advantage is, if you ever have any ambition for becoming a bigger company that isn't associated with you, specifically, and which you might eventually retire from in 4 years or something, or 10 years, then it'll still be there. My site could very easily be my own name, because it's all about me. I tell stories about, you know, I shave my beard, and this is what my kids are doing, and what I'm doing editorial. So it could very easily be. I have a friend whose name is Alistair, and he is at alistair.com, and has been since 1996 or something, which is great. He also has other domains for businesses. So it's, I don't have a preference. It's whatever you're comfortable with. If you think it might become awkward, well, you know, you can always keep that domain and point it to something else later. If you decide to get a company name and place in your name, you just have to change whatever you need. Weird story about that. Apple Computer, for the longest time, has had, if you go to mammals.org, as in little furry creatures, or big like us, mammals.org, that is Apple Computer's homepage as well. It's another name for their homepage. And no one has ever explained why that's been so for a very long time. So I don't know if there's a, you know, you could get a good conspiracy theory on here.
Derek, can you explain the relationship between domaindirect.com and the web space provided by your ISP?
There is no relationship other than that you can tell it through a web form to you. You can tell domaindirect to point your domain at any web space you want. You can point it at Amazon.com if you want.
It's not a server.
No, I mean, it's a web page, but it's a tiny little web page that doesn't actually say anything. And all it does is redirect the query to somewhere else, and you tell it where it is. So there's no relationship between domain direct and where you put your files at all, other than the link you make, which is the same as the link you make from your page to somewhere.
So you could say you could have your files on your own computer rather than.
If you are willing to go, if you're willing to take your computer and set it up as a web server permanently connected to the internet, if you know how to do that, you know where I go. I could do that, I could figure it out, but it's generally not worth the time. Because that means you have to have a computer always running, always connected, always serving up web pages. If it ever crashes or you need to upgrade it, or the power goes out, or something happens, your website's gone, or it's at least offline.
There's
different to save money. There's different sites I have to shop. Yeah. And there's inexpensive sites. Yeah. But you use their domain name. Yeah. You use yours. Yeah.
So I could go to
Dresda,
pointed to the inexpensive
shop. That's exactly what I did. The longest time my site was on my Telus web space. And that's what I did. There. Previously, it just had the one of the names. But yeah, so that's why I used that service, because I went, hey, this is cheaper than doing. And eventually, I did. So I had a really cheap place in the States, which has had very low reliability. But there are other reasons why you would want to get. Essentially, you can rent space on somebody's web computer, wherever. Mine's in Dallas, I think, although it was in Reno. And you would get it, whatever. And that, you know, that there, they combine the name of your site and the server it's on, so that you can. The disadvantage with this domain directing is you can't do the hypermachine.com/anything and have that work. You can do some other stuff like clients.hypermachine.com. You have 10 of those you can do, so it's got some pros and cons. But it's a good cheap way to start, and you can always change it later. Yeah, I now do, but only as of July, because I find what I needed more space than Telus provided. They provided 5 megabytes of space, and I got one that gave me 200. Because I put a lot of files. Yes. That's another thing. Perfect segue for me. You should use, I think, what you need in addition to the screensaver. What you need in addition to a domain is an email address that isn't going to change. The easiest thing to do is when you get a domain, usually you get sometimes however many you want email addresses at that domain. So pick one and make that your business email address. That's my suggestion. It's my email address. dkmiller@penju.com. Although, in fact, you can do anything at penju.com. You can just mash on the keyboard and you get penju.com. I'll get it. In fact, I got some weird things that way. Somebody else may have owned that domain or something very similar. I got a service reminder for a 1985 Corvette in Ohio. It was supposed to come in for its regular service, and they sent it to something at penju.com. I emailed them back saying, I don't think it's me. I also got a some diagrams of some sort of pipe fitting setup that I was supposed to look over and approve. So you may get those if somebody's had your domain before. They do go away. Some people register them and they use them, or they don't, and then they let them go, and you might end up with it. So be aware that you might get some of the stuff that's going to be good. Yeah. I wish I could say that. I may see if I can put some stuff on my site. The one I'm using now is called jaguarpc.com, but I won't recommend it particularly because they've had some problems. There are a million and one of them. I'd find a place. There are places that do ratings of them too. Most of them are much the same. You know, the cheaper they are, the more work you got to do yourself. The more you have to know to get your stuff there. Whereas if you know your internet provider, although they may charge you more, it may be worth letting them do all that stuff because they'll help you walk you through it. Plus your files might already be there all the time to do it. So you've got to sort of look and compare. And, you know, they might be able to give you some advice. You know, I don't know that. I'm sorry, can't hear you. Well, I pay several people. One of the things I'm going to be talking about later is sort of taking a grab bag of services from all over the place. My email actually goes through TELUS because I have the TELUS high-speed internet. But nobody ever sees my TELUS email address. It exists, but nobody ever sees it. I've never given it to anybody because I have two permanent email addresses. I have one at Pen Machine. I have one that's older, this place called POBOX, P-O-Box.com. And all they do is forward email. You set up an account there and it's $20 a year US, and you can set it up for 5 years for cheaper or something. And you just get this email address. And again, at any time you can go there and change where that email ends up. So I point that address and my Pen Machine address at my TELUS address, which I know but nobody else does. So all my mail from wherever people are sending it comes to me the same way. It comes into the same bucket. All the spam goes there too. It all comes into the same bucket, but it can come from multiple directions. So the actual computer I hook up to get my email is at TELUS, but the places where people send the email. So sometimes I realize I send an email to myself to test something, whatever. Sometimes I do that, and I realize that email is going from me to somewhere in Illinois, and then somewhere in Toronto, and then somewhere in Dallas, and then it's coming all the way back across the continent to TELUS, and then it's getting me. It's kind of a waste of resources, but luckily they're just electrons. So yes?
Do you have to balance that sort of thing against security problems?
Yeah, in theory.
Well, it's a hack, not that person's email hack.
Yeah, I mean, people spoof your email, they try and forge. I mean, it's easy to forge it to look like it's coming from you. And people may try to do stuff, so there are some concerns there. It's better to try and, you know, my arrangement has come about just because I've been playing it. I mean, there was a time when I had probably 8 or 10 or 12 different email addresses to try to pair them. That's just because I'm that kind of guy.
I mean, Shaw, you know, probably has no security because that sort of thing up to the point. Now that another, I don't want to call it a proxy server,
yeah,
or a proxy email server or whatever, but how do you know if you're calling their security?
You don't for sure unless you check them out a bit. You can talk to other people who use their service and see if there's ever been any problems. And, you know, something like having your own domain. If all you have is, you know, the one domain and it's pointed somewhere else, there's not a lot of risk to it. And email is not especially risky for people to try and get in and read it. Yeah, well, there's a great way to do many things. The thing is, any email address you have, the way email works, internet email was originally set up by, you know, academics and other people who were just They all trusted each other, essentially, because they were all a fairly small group. So the way the technologies work, it's dead easy to say, you know, one of the things that comes out of this is, I send emails from my telephone, and they never say they're from them. They say they're from end machines, or cobots, or whatever. Sometimes they say they're from other things. And all I do is tell the email program, say it's from this other address. I could make that anything. I could make that Bill Gates and Microsoft that far. And it would look like that's where it came from. It doesn't take that much for somebody who knows what they're doing to see that it's not, like digging into the contents of the email. But that's what spammers do. They say it's from something, and it's never from them. You reply to a spam, it's never going to be your address. Yes.
But what else do you put on your editor site to attract clients? You know, your name and maybe the contact information. What other things do you have on your site?
My advice is, I have this on the slide, I don't know. But my advice is, put anything on there you think people would find useful and that you don't think you're going to make much money on, or that you don't have any means, and you don't think it's going to go that way. So, you know, if you've written something and you've had first publication rights on it, or, you know, somebody had first publication rights but then they reverted to you, you wrote a freelance article, or you know somebody who did, put it on your website, unless you think you're going to sell it. Even if it's old and not particularly relevant to the current, you know, it's talking about something that happened 5 years ago, or, you know, covers of the Sydney Olympics, kind of whatever, you can put that on your website. Because, and this is a good time to talk about it, everybody uses Google now to search for anything. And the reason they do that is because it's better than the other ones. Before Google, when you used a search engine, it was really hit or miss. You were going to get anything useful. And the reason Google works better, a lot of it is patented secret technology, exactly how they do it. But essentially, what it does is it looks at your page and sees who else, at any page, sees who else is linking to that. And through complicated things that I don't really understand, and may as well be magic, there's a system whereby they can figure out how prestigious a site is, how many other people link to it, and on given topics. So it's sort of a self-built, bootstrap reputation machine. And the neat thing about Google is it is programmed by everybody who builds websites. When you build a website and you make a link to somebody else, Google, when it finds your site, follows that link and says, oh, this site is linking to this other site about these words or about words in this vicinity. So there was actually a thing that was kind of a trend last year among geek types called Google bombing, where
Google
bombing, I think that's what it's called, where it was like a joke. You would get as many people as you could to link to somebody saying, total idiot, as the link. Click total idiot and it goes to some guy's page. And if enough people do that, Google says, oh, well, the word total idiot or affiliated with that is okay. So if you search for total idiot, that guy shows up really high. And so that's why when you search for, you know, Spawn of Satan or whatever, Microsoft comes up. And a lot of people don't like Microsoft, and that's what they cook, and they link to Microsoft. So that's what it is. People who are, anybody who has a website and links to something else helps program Google to figure out what's going on. So what that means is that if you've got a site, you put stuff on it. And the nice thing is, in the old days, you had to do this search engine optimization. You try to put fancy keywords in hidden places and do all this stuff to try and get the search engine to find you. I've discovered that all you have to do to get Google to notice you is write stuff that's relevant. The top of your web page, let's see if I've got this here. Up here, it says, you know, this is my name, and this is our meeting. There's a title tag when you build a web page. You're writing it by hand, it's in these things called title tags. It's just title. Or if you're using a program, it asks you for a title, and that's what shows up at the top. That's the most important thing for search engines, for Google. It looks at that and says, okay, I'm assuming that this site is about what the title bar says. So that's why if you're using a program to do this and it has title, you should change that. You see a lot of pages where it's got something here and up here it just says title. Or, you know, page title. And Google is looking at that and going, page title. If you search for page title, Google, you get all sorts of stuff.
I've done a search on Google for editor or editing and in searching in Canada, and I come up with the EAC website, where our West Coast editor is posted on there. And they didn't even pick up my name or I've seen Paulette's name. It's amazing.
Google reads PDF like Acrobat files too, so I don't know what's in there. The thing is, what I put on my website, which I can't show you, the top title there is Derek K. Miller, writer and editor, Vancouver, Canada, Kamishinda. So if you search for writer, editor, Canada, I was number one for a while, I'm number three or something now. Because those words are up there. Yes.
You know, manipulation aside, you know, totally aside, your name starts to show up in Google. Does that mean that you've got a lot of hits now?
Well, what it probably means is that people are linking to you, or they're linking to something. They're coming into your page. Other people are linking to you. You may not even know who it is, but people are linking to you, and somehow
it happens. Fooling around. Google, if they find my name, just kind of comes up 20 years back.
Oh yeah.
And one particular topic needs to be directed there. It's just a word.
Yeah. Ego surfing. Yeah. You look for your quotes, that makes sure that you get the two names together or the three names together and I look on you. So I do that and I find all sorts of weird things. Like they find things like wrote a UVC posting on the web, old things I worked on. It's kind of insidious because, I mean, that's some, you know, there are problems with this. See people go for a job interview and the person who's interviewing them puts in their name and finds out, you know, they were breaking windows in Seattle. You know, or they were in jail. You know, they were saying, kill everybody. So you gotta watch it.